Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Oh, we certainly do. And I do want to note that this theme song was co-written and co-performed by my dear friend Giacomo Baldelli, who is Italian. Why does that matter? Well, you'll find out soon enough in today's episode of Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. I'm your co-host, Mark Blankenship, and I'm joined by Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, or buongiorno, or hola. Welcome back, bienvenue, to our Weird Al versus Everybody season. This is episode 15, where we are contemplating La Bamba, as I guess evinced in the late 80s by Los Lobos and Lou Diamond Phillips as Richie Valens, and Weird Al's Lasagna. I cannot see lasagna like for sale or on a menu or anywhere without in my head hearing not just la 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 lasagna, but my mother belting it often in supermarkets or other public places where it would be max humiliation for your friend Sarah.
Yes.
Bless her heart. She really had a gift for that. So the current score in our Weird Al versus Everybody season, in case you're playing along at home, is Al 7 and the field 6. It was looking dicey for Mr. Yankovic for a couple weeks there, but he has recently pulled even. If you're like, how did we get here? Episode 15, what? That means you're not on our Patreon and you should investigate getting over there so you hear all the episodes of this season. That's patreon.com/mastass. Now, La Bamba. I was in Spanish 1 in 1988 when this song was huge again, and the video was on all the time, and Lou Diamond Phillips and his foxy 50s widow's peak as Richie Valens was
yes,
making me feel some things about folk culture as adapted to rock and roll. Mark, what was your experience with the song La Bamba prior to Al repurposing it for the pasta age? I don't know.
Well, as I have said a couple of times in this season and will be saying again later, the album that Lasagna is on, even worse, is my gateway drug for Weird Al. I had the cassette. I listened to every song at length and with great attention. So for me, Lasagna is Weird Al canon. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how I could defend that in court, given the fact that clearly it isn't for most people, but here I am and here I sit. Now, that wasn't even the question that you asked me, however. My relationship to La Bamba was entirely built around the fact that Los Lobos took this song to number one when they released their version in connection to this movie. I, of course, had no idea that La Bamba is a traditional folk song that greatly predates not only Los Lobos, but Richie Valens. And was typically not an up-tempo, rocky number, but was more like a folk song, because it was. So I just had that, like, fifth grader's limited understanding of the world where I just assumed that Los Lobos had written and performed this song. Or if you had asked me, that's what I would have assumed. But also, of course, I remember liking it, because how could you not like La Bamba? It's a great song.
It really is, and with all due respect to the late Mr. Valens, I think that the Lobos, El Versión de Los Lobos, is far superior. The guitar, like, everybody in that group plays guitar, so I'm not sure which Lobo is either doing the famous riff or picking at the end. But that guitar riff, either in front or at the end, both of them are so sick. The sound is so dense and rich. And I resented the song because I, you know, Señora Citarella made us drone it in Spanish 1 at like 8:30 in the morning. And we were not there for it. We were not there for singing like a basically chanson to each other at girls' school, just being like, I am not a sailor. It's a lot to ask of girls' school students, but the version that went to number one was absolutely righteous in its number oneness, I feel.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right that Los Lobos' version is better. Like, it's just so much more musically rich, and all those guys really knew what they were doing, and they lived longer than Richie Valens did, which meant that they lived long enough to get really, really good and seasoned on those instruments.
I have cats that lived longer than poor Richie Valens did, alas. Shall we hear a clip of the original La Bamba?
Why, yes, let's. You know, I don't know what this song is about. You just saying that about I Am Not a Sailor, I thought, oh, maybe that's why they say Capitan in there somewhere. What is this song even about?
Para bailar la bamba, to dance la bamba, and then some things. And then yariba yariba means that he's climbing the mast of something, which has some suggestions of queer involvement. Probably not. But he's just singing to a loved one, I believe, and saying he's not a mere sailor. He is the captain, and he's the captain of their shared destiny.
Oh.
But I did not, I admit that I did not marinate, as it were, in the original lyrics because I was too busy bugging out while I was prepping this episode. Lo siento.
I think that that's interesting and nice for us as native English speakers to be able to just enjoy a song in another language and not necessarily understand it. That's something that happens to non-English speakers all the time when they listen to pop songs. You know, most people in other countries who are not native English speakers are probably not really grasping the lyrical content of what they're hearing. And it's why so many pop songs don't even need to have sensible lyrics. They can make nonsense sounds and it's fine. And
like even English speakers for English pop songs and rock songs, sometimes you and I unpack a lyric and we're like, what the f-?
Yeah. Well, and I am so lyric driven, lyric focused when I listen to music that I can remember specifically in high school buying an album by an African, she's from Benin, Beninese performer named Angelique Kidjo. And a lot of that album was in other languages, African languages. And I didn't know what she was saying. And so I was able to just listen to the music. And it was an experience. It was not an experience I was used to having. And I remember thinking, wow, this is kind of cool. Like, I have to listen with different ears. So I'm glad kind of that I don't really know what La Bamba is about. Because for this song, I am listening with a different set of ears.
Yeah, I think usually prior to it being refashioned as a pop song first in the 50s and then again in the 80s, that its sort of traditional use was, like you said, a slower tempo, more of a plea than a bop. But I think it's better as a bop. Frankly.
It was bopified.
Yes, it was bopified to its whatever the opposite of detriment is. People, I've had a long day. Nutriment? Let's go with that.
Benefit?
Yes, there it is. There's that very obvious word that I learned in like the third grade. Okay, so speaking of nutriment, Weird Al's version about lasagna. Your thoughts? I mean, you've said that the album that it came from was formative Al for you. How was it to come back to this?
Honestly, I still dig it.
Because of the association with my mother, like this just happened to me this morning. I was in a bodega. They had a little sign in front that's like, you know, Ronzoni lasagna. two for $3 or whatever. And in my head, I was like, somewhere Barb has seen this and is singing this. But this is an interesting one because I think that it shows off Weird Al's specific and, you know, broad range of skills when it comes to adapting and satirizing these things, but without quite rising to the level of the greatness of some other songs that we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we listen to a clip?
Yes, and then I will add to that interesting line of thought.
All right.
Would you like some zucchini or my homemade linguine? It's hard to beat, have a more fettuccine. Hey, you getting too skinny, you gotta to eat them.
So the reason I picked that clip is because of the way he pronounces the word skinny.
I'm glad that you picked that clip because my favorite thing about lasagna is that there is that aural nod using the accordion to the fantastic guitar work that we were talking about in the original earlier, and that also flows with like the kind of 101 shortcut sound cues, like things that you would hear on a TV show when they're at an Italian restaurant and they're about to get in a fight on whatever show, or like
right.
The place from the movie Big.
Yes.
That where the guy's catching the dough in his mouth, that it's like that sort of red and white check tablecloth, straw on the bottle of wine vibe. And there would be an accordion player there, and that he flows this into his subject matter is really clever. But once that's done, it's just okay and not great. I mean, it's very good, but it's not great. I did not realize Rick Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo Derringer was his producer on this album. So to me, this track should sound hotter and better than it does, but it's still pretty good.
Yeah, I feel like I was never anticipating a time when we would hear a song that would make me think of My Sister Rose by 10,000 Maniacs.
Oh my God.
But here we are.
They're back.
Because it's so, both of those songs so obviously pull on that Italian wedding tradition.
Mm-hmm. Dollar dances with the bride.
That Colucci, he can bake.
He sure can.
If you would like to dig back into our deepest archives, listeners, you can find the episode where we rank every song on the 10,000 Maniacs album In My Tribe, and we go deep on the lyrics to the song My Sister Rose, but that's for another time. I think that you're right that this song, it is exactly the middle point of Weird Al for me. It's better than most people could probably make a song that is filled with shallow Italian stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't that great because it's just a bunch of, it's a clever the way he keeps rhyming things. But after you get past, like you were saying, the impishness and of the first 35 seconds, you could just go on. As we've spoken about before, this is one of those songs where you're like, yeah, 30 seconds. That's about all I need.
Yep. Yeah, and the 30 seconds happens to be the 30 seconds that you clipped, but it's like once that sort of musical witticism has been executed, which it kind of was at the top of the song also, you're kind of all set. Like, I just imagine him being at some airport in some, like, Past Express, waiting for his flight to leave, and it's that big poster with all the different noodles on it. And he's just staring at it, and he's like, well, fuck it. I'm stuck here. It's snowing. I guess I'll write a song. And it's like, well, you know, rhyming linguine and zucchini is not, I would say, a true test of his talent.
Right. It's not like Coleridge levels here.
No.
So I'm going to start down a path now,
the
Sarah.
Ancient Mariner.
The Rime of the Ancient Marinera. Goodbye forever. Yes, that's the end of our show, everyone.
This is when we lost everything. It took a while, but here we go.
I was thinking about the fact that in an earlier era, like the early 20th century, when Italians were being heavily discriminated against, along with immigrating Irish people, like both of those groups of people were not yet quote unquote white in American society.
Yep.
This song would probably have been sold on sheet music and would have been played as a much more grotesque collection of stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And now that Italians are white in the American popular imagination, I feel like that this song isn't offensive anymore, even though it is absolutely stereotypical. And I don't know if I'm guarantee you that there is someone who disagrees with me who's listening to me say this right now, but I am just struck by the changing perception of who is and isn't white in with regard to people who come from Europe and come to this country. And this song to me sort of crystallizes that.
Yeah, I mean, my notes just talked about how I think there are probably Italian Americans who did not and do not love this, like, what I call the Epcot Italian Nona.
Yes.
Concept of Italian Americans in this song. But that when this song came out, I think we were kind of at the tail end of that as a like sanitized pop culture conception of what Italians were. With the understanding that my extremely like white-haired, but before that was a redhead from a long line of redheads, because all the David Mazzonis going back to the boot married blonde Dutch gals. But my grandmother did not feature anybody knowing that she was born Clara Mazzoni in South Philadelphia. She did not want that known, because that was a capital P problem when she was a girl.
Yeah.
Well, but that was 100 years ago. And like, they had this argument in The Sopranos all the time too. Like the scenes with the Pennas and Dr. Melfi, and him being like, you know, it's frankly offensive that they think that that the Italian American experience is Chef Boyardee and The Godfather. And it's like, well, but then there's this show, The Sopranos, which, you know, made by a guy who was, I think, born Richard Cesare, and like, that's making the mafia not chic, but like, it did a lot for Jersey's rep, I'm not gonna lie, and we thank it for its service. But like, this it's one of those things where it's like, I'm not Italian enough anymore to really comment on the stereotypes that this doesn't even exploit. Like, I do think that it is a comment on the fact that this sort of mid 20th century, like, rated G concept of Italian American culture was, you know, D's and Do's, Chef Boyardee, make him an offer you can't refuse, and like, just that, and that it wasn't deeper than that. So I wouldn't say that this is like a master's level incisive explication of that from a, you know, Polish American accordion player, but
it's interesting to this is a fascinating topic to me, though, because you're right that this song harkens back to a conception of Italians that would have been prominent in Weird Al's childhood.
Yeah.
And it makes me think about the fact that Sophia Petrillo on The Golden Girls also harkens back to that. I've never thought about that before.
Yeah.
But she is kind of the vaudeville Italian stereotype in many ways.
Yeah. And, you know, I always used to tell my grandmother, like, oh, she reminds me of you, which my grandmother did not care for. And it was a very sort of surface, like, they had the same short, white, curly hair. They carried the same straw pocketbooks. They had the same cardigans that they'd knitted themselves, but Sophia Petrillo was like leaning into that picture it like Sicily 1904 thing. And my grandmother never fucking set foot in Italy and right. never would have been like, picture it, Tuscany 1913 or whatever the, you know, but it was a very different, like in the time of belted bathing suits, it was a very different thing to be Italian and to sort of think that everyone assumed that you were just going to be wearing black from ears to toes and have a mustache.
Right.
So
this is making me think about how much of Weird Al's music is making us reckon with the concept of offensiveness.
Yeah.
Because
and evolving standards of like things that would have been okay to like stereotypes that would have been okay to use as shortcuts that aren't, but more interestingly, like, I don't know how to put this, but that it's kind of no longer enough to parody an attitude. I mean, we'll be talking about this in a couple of future episodes where there yes. are either terms in the original that he just changes in live performance now, or, terms in the original song he's parodying that you're like, ooh, and then you're like, oh, right, okay, that is actually satire in the original. Anyway, we will get there. But yeah, I am absolutely the kind of like 1/16th mayo Italian that they were always making fun of in season one of The Sopranos, so I don't really get to think too deeply on this specific angle on it, but when, like, I think we've seen as we go through the season that Weird Al has the capacity for more than a kind of listy first thought, like kind of shortcutty thing like this, that now it's not fair to judge him really now on something that he made in the 80s necessarily, but it's like, well, some things are more successful than others, and I feel like we could have expected better. Even though it's called lasagna, you kind of want more than, well, that like fakey Chef Boyardee accent.
But it's also true that we have left behind the vaudeville style of broad ethnic parody that was our cultural inheritance of humor, especially in the 80s. It was still very close to us in many ways. And
yeah,
all of that shit that was happening in the pre-radio era of comedy in this country was built on broad ethnic stereotypes. And that couldn't help but inform the original television comedy, the original radio comedy. And it was still there in the 80s because people who were alive and working had grown up in one way or another in that place. And having inherited that vaudeville style of comedy that was still hanging on in the 80s, it is now very clear, almost 40 years removed, that we've shifted the way that we make comedy. And so, as always happens with comedy, this has to be a museum piece because we're just not the same society anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think it's that serious. I don't think Richard LaPenna, the character from The Sopranos, who was always like, you know, the Italian-American Anti-Defamation League, like writing letters to Congress people and shit like that, that I don't think that even he would say this sinks to the level of offensive. But it's interesting to think about that time, and particularly while you were talking, I was thinking about, I don't know if you remember this, but like Polish jokes.
Oh yeah, always
were still a thing when I was a kid, and it was just like, I mean, it was like a way to have humor about people being slapstickily, surreally stupid. And keep in mind, I also am from the era of dead baby jokes. Which,
oh yeah,
like,
me too. Yeah, we were telling those when I was in school. And But, you know, interestingly, I can remember, though, we would also, even though I grew up in Tennessee, and I'm currently in Tennessee, we would tell jokes about rednecks and things, too. And it was like,
right.
Even though those jokes were aimed at us in a certain way, being in the South, we would tell them, too. So I guess at the end of the day, people are always going to be making jokes about in-groups and out-groups. And that's just never going to stop. I don't think that it will ever go away.
No, I don't think it will either. And I don't, but it was just interesting to be sort of at the end of that time when it would even be something that a kid would know or yeah. understand. Like, I don't know. Like sometimes when, like there was a recent documentary called Quiet on the Set, and the it was about the dark side of kids' TV, and the key art was the color bars from a color TV, like before it warmed up and picked up a channel. That is like a standard visual representation just to put that like filter on a graphic. And that implies like this is TV and it's kind of old TV, but like the TV that they're talking about was on cable. So you would yeah. never have had those color bars. And it's interesting that that visual reference will read to generations who never experienced actual, like a color TV with a fucking tube in it. Like was at my grandma's house. And if you wanted to watch channel two, like if you wanted to watch the CBS station, someone had to stand in the yard with a coat hanger. So right. that like that's gone, but there are still ghosts in the machine of language and visual representation and like jokes that it's like, where does that even come from? Like that Polish people are supposed to be, why is that a thing? Why the Polish? Haven't they been through enough?
Well, and similarly, why are Southern people supposed to be the ones that marry their cousins? Why not people?
Yeah, what the hell?
Yeah.
I mean, like, the person who most famously did that, in our memory anyway, Rudolf Giuliani.
Oh, or honestly, Eleanor and Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Yeah. I mean, everyone involved in both of those houses of power had a lot of problems. Beyond.
That Game of Thrones was played in a different way. Well, here we are from you to Skeeny to the Roosevelts fucking each other.
Oh my God. Only, I hope, on Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. What did you even vote for? I voted for Los Lobos.
We have a project. No question for me, I voted for La Bamba.
Mm-hmm. And the listeners?
They also overwhelmingly voted for La Bamba.
I also voted for Los Lobos. It wasn't especially close. It got a little closer when I was listening to the accordion bridge, but like we said, it's very good. It's not great. So that brings us back into a tie. Weird Al has 7 points, and so does the field. What do we have in store for us next week? Or excuse me, later this week for Patreon supporters in episode 16.
Yes, patrons only will be able to hear us talk about Like a Virgin by first-time subject on the podcast Madonna. And
Madonna.
Like a, Madonna. And Like a Surgeon by Weird Al.
Oh, God. Well, I'm glad that we are finally giving Madonna her due in a season that's not even about her. But somehow she'll find a way to take over. That's why she's Madonna, bitch. Guys, thank you so much for listening. What a strange journey to Italy this took us on. And thanks for being here. And we, again, urge you to check us out at our Patreon, patreon.com/mastaz. We have been doing a lot of extra episodes for a long time, not just these. So you would get all of those, too. So if you've got a long car trip or even a short one, we'd love to see you over there. Thank you so much for listening.
Bella. la mine ghi un bacio tu, ma perché un bacetto ne ghi a me? Curva tu dici sempre no, ma so già che ti va e già pensi me lo dà. Pure i colombi fan così, van di qua, van di là, poi si baciano e che fa? Dolce baciar con volontà, mia nini, bocca e bocca star così. Gira, rigira, biondina, l'amore, la vita, godere ci fa. Quando ti vedo vicina, il mio cor sempre fatiche, ti dà.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.